It is Tuesday, September 14th. Welcome to Menace to Sports, episode 161. I am Zach Smith, your host. Somber day and week in Big Ten country. If you're a fan of the Midwest football or you are a Buckeye fan, certainly it is not a good week after that showing by the defense for Ohio State. And we're going to get into it, and I'm going to do what I did, I think 2 years ago for the Clemson game, where I'm going to go play-by-play, drive-by-drive, and break down exactly what the fuck just happened, because it was embarrassing. It was an embarrassing game. You should be embarrassed if you're a Buckeye fan, and you deserve answers. Everyone deserves answers. No one more than Ryan Day deserves answers, because the reality is some players, some sides of the ball, some position groups played exceptional, and some did not. So we're going to break it down, all of it for you. We're also going to talk Iowa just beating the brakes off of Iowa State. Florida State, who I don't care what you say. I never said Florida State is a great team or a good team. I said they were the best-looking team in week one in the ACC, and they were. But, boy, losing to Jacksonville State, that is quite an embarrassment. And then they had a player propose on the field afterwards. What a memory. Take an L to Jacksonville State and then ask your honey to be your woman, your wifey. Don't know that I could do that one. And then Notre Dame, how bad are they? I mean, they narrowly escaped Toledo, and I think they got hosed. We're going to talk about why they got hosed at home. Why Toledo got hosed. And how bad are they? They're going to lose 3-4 games, in my opinion, after watching them play. They should be 0-2 right now. They really should be. Poor coaching decisions by Florida State, and if they had a ref crew that wasn't handing them the game, they would be. But little recap. The tailgate charging on lane was unbelievable. For those of you that showed up, we appreciate you. I know Braxton had a blast. Everyone had fun. It was a hell of a time. I mean, it was by far the best tailgate yet. Make sure you check it out. We will launch the Eventbrite for Penn State October 30th. Little Halloween theme. Maybe we'll have you wear a little costume. But hopefully that will be a tailgate for a big Buckeye victory. It was tough to watch, and the only good news was it was a tailgate, so as it got bad, we could turn away and talk and have a drink or do whatever. So really rough weekend, but let's stop talking about how rough it was, and let's talk about why it was rough. So let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown. Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
First and foremost, breaking news. I don't know. This feel like this guy's been fired every year, but now he's officially fired. Clay Helton is out at USC after an embarrassing loss to Stanford, who lost to Kansas State in week one. For some reason, man, USC, they just can't get it going at USC. It's like the curse of Pete Carroll and Reggie Bush taking money. They just cannot get even to like pseudo relevancy, right? We played them in the one Rose Bowl. It was or Cotton Bowl, not Rose Bowl. Should be the Rose Bowl, right? USC, Ohio State, that should just, you just assume that would be a Rose Bowl, but it was actually the Cotton Bowl. So we played them that 1 year. They were decent. We didn't have a problem with them, but they were decent. But for some reason, man, the bright lights of Hollywood aren't attracting recruits like we talked about. I mean, you look at the national landscape, Pac-12 country quarterbacks are everywhere across the national landscape, from C.J. Stroud here at Ohio State down to DJ Uiagalelei at Clemson, Bryce Young at Alabama. I mean, the list goes on. Brock Purdy is an Arizona kid. I mean, really, across the country, you watch California kids playing quarterback at big-time programs. And I can't remember the stat. I want to say 80% of starting NFL quarterbacks are California or Texas kids. So there's no reason USC is not relevant other than they need to make the right hire. So who are they going to hire? Well, first we could listen to Dennis Dodd and people like that in the sports media that are going to claim that it's Luke Fickle's job, and if he doesn't take it, then Bob Stoops is next in line. That very well may be true. I'm not going to say it's not true. I have no knowledge of what USC is going to do. I do know this much. Luke Fickle would not be a good hire for USC. Not because he's not a great football coach. He's a great football coach. But because he's not a fit at all. Sometimes in the national media and sports fans, we look at who's a good coach. We should hire them, right? Who's the best coach in the country? That's who we should hire. But that's just not the case. Because there's something called a fit. Right? Urban Meyer was a great fit at Ohio State, right? You look at Ryan Day was a great fit at Ohio State. James Franklin is a guy that I feel like has that Hollywood feel. So Luke Fickle is not a fit. He's never recruited out West ever. I don't think he's ever went out there and recruited a kid. And if he has, it was maybe once in his entire career. He doesn't know the landscape. He doesn't have connections. If he did get the job, he would have to revamp his entire staff and hire a bunch of West Coast Pac-12 type of guys that had established connections in Southern California, in the islands, in Hawaii, in Washington, in Arizona. Like, he would have to hire a Pac-12 staff. It's just not a fit. It's really not. Bob Stoops, no thanks. I mean, great football coach, legend, Hall of Famer, but does he have what it takes to come bring USC back to relevancy? Not in my opinion. He's doing his little cush TV job, took over for Urban Meyer on the Fox Big Noon kickoff, and I think that's right where he belongs, kind of ride off into the sunset. His career is over. I mean, certainly he is capable of coaching again, but I don't think that's a home run hire that's going to bring USC back to relevancy. The guy I already mentioned, James Franklin, he has that glitz and glamour Hollywood feel. I think it would be a decent fit and a solid hire. He's got that personality for Southern California. I don't necessarily know that he would be great in the recruiting scene. A lot like Luke Fickle, he would have to hire a West Coast staff, or at least, you know, half of them. If he's going to hire 10 guys, he'd bring 5 of his guys and need to replace 5 of his guys now with 5 guys that know the Pac-12 landscape, know the West Coast, have had success recruiting there, right? Are familiar faces to those high school coaches. He would have to do that. The other guy, how about Eddie O, right? Eddie Orgeron's been there. He was at USC. Maybe he'd leave LSU in the train wreck that he is involved in without Joe Burrow. But I'll tell you this much. After that performance in the horseshoe, I would certainly consider Joe Moorhead at Oregon. I mean, he had a good offense at Penn State. He's doing really well at Oregon. Why not consider Joe Moorhead? But in my opinion, I honestly would bet a lot of money they go the NFL route. Right, it worked the first time with Pete Carroll. Then they got away from that model, bringing in Sark probably would have worked out if he wasn't a drunk, right? And then just some of these hires have been, you know, they've been up against it. And I think they go back to that NFL model. It worked with Pete Carroll. I would imagine it could work again. I think USC is kind of like an NFL job, right? You're in LA, you're dealing with the Hollywood, right? Hollywood Boulevard, you're dealing with celebrities. I mean, you talk about back when Matt Leinart was there, he was going to red carpet events. Like, when USC is popping, you are like a pro team. So I think a pro coach makes sense. One, obviously at the forefront of every list every year, the past couple years, is Eric Bieniemy from Kansas City. Hiring a big time coach with that type of name, who also is a minority, would be a huge splash hire. That's something no one wants to talk about, and I don't give a shit. I don't have a racist bone in my body, but hiring a minority coach does a lot in recruiting. You're mostly recruiting minority kids, right? I mean, you look at college football rosters, most of them are black kids. I mean, it just is what it is, right? And hiring a black coach certainly provides some familiarity to those recruits, right? And, I mean, it's been a proven way. Look at Charlie Strong did at Louisville. He hired a mainly minority staff, and they killed it in recruiting. They were pulling kids from South Florida up to Louisville left and right. So I think Eric Bieniemy could be a great hire and a splash hire for sure. The name recognition would be there. Another guy that I think, you know, definitely fits the mold is Bill O'Brien, right? Has coached in college at Penn State, was an NFL head coach. Now he has the Nick Saban stamp of approval, the Nick Saban pedigree. Bill O'Brien is going to be the next man up in that coaching tree, right? Steve Sarkisian, and then all of them, Jeremy Pruitt, Kirby Smart, Mike Locksley. I mean, the Lane Kiffin, the list goes on and on, right? Guys, especially guys like Lane Kiffin, they got that regeneration from Nick Saban. I think Bill O'Brien fits that mold. Great football coach. Now he's got the Alabama resume builder. I think Bill O'Brien would be a great coach. Or what everyone's going to talk about is that NFL coach Urban F. Meyer. Will he take a page out of his idol, Nick Saban? His idol. I mean, he split on the Dolphins and took over a perennial power in Alabama who'd been underperforming for a while. Sound familiar? A Florida NFL team loses a national champion college coach to go take a perennial job that has been underperforming. That storyline sounds awfully eerily familiar, doesn't it? It's what Saban did. What would Saban do? We'll see. I don't think Urban would do that. I mean, obviously he probably could have had the USC job last year, but he wanted to test out the NFL. And after this weekend, it is not going well. That was brutal to watch, wasn't it? Man, they were a favored team too. They're not going to be favored many times. They were favored in that game and they just, I mean, shit the bed. Brutal, brutal, brutal. But it'll be interesting to see what USC does. My opinion, NFL mold. Bill O'Brien or Eric Bieniemy. I mean, you could throw out any other hot NFL name, and that is a guy they will at least interview, right? They'll at least look into. Joe Brady maybe would be a decent option after what he did at LSU with Joe Burrow. So it'll be interesting to see. But I want to talk about this. I want to talk about how the University of Toledo Rockets were hosed in South Bend, Indiana. And it was, I don't know if you guys watched it. If you didn't, just go watch like the last, I don't know, 5 minutes of the game. So Notre Dame has the ball, right? 3 minutes, 26 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Kyren Williams fumbles the ball and Toledo recovers. They're down by two. They drive down. They hit some big passes, score a touchdown with a minute 35 left. Then Notre Dame gets the ball back. They throw a bomb to Kevin Austin for 34 yards, and then the refs get involved, right? They get, I think, 6 yards, a second and four. Then they throw a defensive holding call on Toledo, then a pass interference call on Toledo. Just march them right down the field. Help them out a little bit, right? Then they throw an 18-yard touchdown to go up. Then Toledo gets the ball back with 44 seconds left, right? Need to score a touchdown. First, they get a personal foul on the kickoff return. Then they get two more penalties. I mean, the refs had, what, six penalties in the final two drives to essentially hand the game to Notre Dame. So Notre Dame wins by, what, five? So Toledo was hosed in South Bend, and it makes you wonder, right? How good is Notre Dame? I mean, they went wire to wire with a Florida State team that just lost to Jacksonville State, and Florida State would have won that game if it weren't for two, I mean, just outrageous coaching decisions. And then they almost lose to Toledo. They need the refs to help them this past weekend. They needed Mike Norvell and staff to help them the weekend before. How many games is Notre Dame going to lose? I'm predicting at least three. My over-under is at three. Curious your thoughts. Over-under, three losses for Notre Dame. Minnesota is struggling in life without Mo Ibrahim and no pass game. I mean, they beat Miami of Ohio by 5 points, 31-26. Rough, rough day for the Gophers. They are not going to be a force to be reckoned with. And that West looks wide open for Iowa to run it. Now, we'll get to Iowa in a minute. They don't have an offense worth a damn, but it's going to come down to Wisconsin-Iowa for the West, and then it'll be interesting to see what happens in the East because, man, Penn State looks decent. Ohio State does not look decent on defense, and it's... Michigan didn't look bad. Shoot, I don't even want to say that out loud. And you know who else? Michigan State is quietly getting better. After a full-on roster overhaul, they get a blowout win this past weekend, and they are looking better and better and better. And Mel Tucker is looking like a genius for what he did in the offseason, turning that roster over. Now, will they be good enough to beat Penn State or Ohio State? I don't know. Probably not. But regardless, they're much improved from last year, and their improvement is happening faster than you would anticipate, faster than you could do it just through recruiting, right? He's recruiting the portal. Dudes are just transferring out, transferring in. I mean, he had, I want to say, something like 40 new players on the roster at the beginning of this year. But wild, wild landscape of college football, you look around the country. I mean, who is a top four team right now? Alabama is one. Who is another one? I honestly don't know. Ohio State is not. Georgia is not. Their offense is terrible. Clemson is not. Their offense is terrible. Maybe, I guess, like we talked about, if Georgia gets some receivers back, they could be one. Oklahoma has underperformed. Iowa State lost. Is Iowa? Their offense isn't any good. Miami, after getting blown out by Alabama, you figure they're going to bounce back and get a good solid win against App State. They win by 2. 16 missed tackles and 1. App State had 11. So double-digit missed tackles are always hairy. Florida State loses to Jacksonville State. Talk about a fall from resurgence. It's just, I mean, I guess the Mackenzie Milton ESPN press tour has come to an end, throwing 9 passes over 10 yards, only completing 2. Now, again, back to the offensive staff. I mean, the one interception he threw was a scheme error. It was an RPO hitch to the boundary. He held the ball out to fake the run, or at least put the ball in there to see if he could throw it to get the linebackers to bite. When he pulled it out, it didn't time up. You can't run a hitch on RPO unless it's catch, throw. You just can't do it. And they did it. And what happened? The corner jumped it and picked it off and took it back, right? I watch these things and it's like, you set that kid up for failure. Mackenzie Milton was set up for failure on that play. And we're going to get to that a lot in this Ohio State game, but that's a coach's job. Set your kid up for success. Set your player up for success. Now, if he doesn't make the play, that's on him, right? But you need to put him in a position to have the best opportunity to make a play. That's a coach's job. And that's not what happened at Florida State. That's not what happened at Ohio State. And then Texas is the other one. They were the best-looking Big 12 team in week one, and they just get beat down by Sam Pittman and the Arkansas Razorbacks. Sark takes the L on the chin, 40-21, 16 missed tackles also. Just a rough day for some of the teams that look good in week one. Sustaining success is hard, right? You get a big win, right? Like Texas had a ranked win. I don't know if we call that a big win, but you get a ranked win like that to bounce back and get ready to play a salty, tough Arkansas team, that's not easy. You saw it with Ohio State. The greatest example that I have in my career was the double overtime thriller win over Penn State. I mean, it was a big-time win. Probably one of the biggest, most emotional, most exciting games in my career, right? That and maybe the Michigan overtime win. And then you try to bounce back and beat a tough Iowa team. They weren't a great team, but it's a tough team, a solid team. They're tough. They run the ball well. That's really hard to do. And Texas fell victim to it. Obviously, now they have a quarterback controversy. They're going to switch starters. And Sark is going to have, he's got his hands full, right? He's got his hands full. He's got a program with talent that was a mess left by the shitbag, Tom Herman. But that's what culture does to you, right? You build, have a shitbag coach, shitbag culture, and here we are. Sark's got to clean up the mess. So tough loss for Texas, tough for the Big 12 because they look good week one. Another Big 12 tough day was Iowa just rolling and rolling Iowa State. Iowa's defense is the real deal Holyfield, let me tell you that. 2 pick sixes against Indiana. They forced their defense was outstanding against Indiana. Then they forced Brock Purdy, who's been a great player all last year. They forced Brock Purdy to throw 3 picks. Matt Hankins, the other corner, is the multi-interception corner this week. They limit Breece Hall to 4.3 yards a carry, only 69 yards. The only problem that Iowa has is their offense is hot garbage. Hot garbage. It really is. They threw for 106 yards through the air, 1.7 yards per carry on the ground. Breece Hall put one on the turf to make it 4 turnovers, 3 picks. Breece Hall fumbles. Iowa State can't. You're not going to win that game if you have a sloppy ball security game like that. And that's why Iowa won. They didn't move the ball well. Their offense wasn't any good. They just got the ball 4 times in plus territory and only had to hit a couple plays to get points. And it's just the nature of the game of football, right? You can't turn the ball over like that. 0 turnovers to 4 turnovers. You gave the other team 4 extra possessions. Not only 4 extra possessions, but short fields, right? Football is a game of field position. You give a bad offense. If the first team that's going to beat Iowa is the team that doesn't turn it over and makes Iowa drive the length of the field. That team is not going to drive the length of the field against most people. They're just not. Their offense isn't any good. It's not dynamic. It is an efficient offense that can probably put together a couple plays and score on a short field. And that's what Indiana gave them. That's what Iowa State gave them. And that's why Iowa's 2-0 and looking at what? I think they're top five right now, the AP poll that just came out. So that is a fictitious ranking. They are not the number five team in the country. They deserve all the respect. They've had two better wins than anyone else in the country right now in Indiana and Iowa State. Two ranked wins, two really solid opponents. And here we are, right? Here we are. Oh, so that's kind of my preview. We're going to get to the misery for Buckeye fans, at least. If you're an Oregon Duck fan, you're going to enjoy the shit out of this next part. But before we get to Ohio State, do me a favor, check them out, MyBookie. We're going to get a quick word from one of our sponsors, tried and true, 3 years running, MyBookie. A quick word from them. The NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie. With over $500,000 in contest prize money, winning season makes the big games better and the victories even sweeter. Head to mybookie.ag and choose from a variety of boosts, contests, and promotions up for grabs, highlighted by the crown jewel of winning season, the famed MyBookie Super Contest. It only costs $10 to enter. Pick five games against the spread each week. Each win earns you a point, and each point gets you closer to the grand prize. If you missed out on week one, don't even sweat it, because entries are still open, and all it takes is one solid week to get you back in the mix. Don't just take my word for it. Join now and start your winning season with MyBookie today. In order to get you started, make your first deposit at MyBookie.ag and use our promo code Menace, M-E-N-A-C-E, to instantly receive double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using promo code Menace. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right, well, check them out. Obviously, if you bet on Ohio State like we did, you would have lost, but we absolutely destroyed NFL on Sunday to kind of bounce back from that awful Ohio State day. We picked Ohio State money line in three different parlays. All three would have hit if they would have just won as two touchdown favorites. So thank you, Kerry Combs. You owe me some money, even though I don't bet. You owe a lot of people money. You owe our subscribers money, that's for sure. But if you aren't familiar, Menace to Picks on social media, check them out. Best handicappers in the country. Anyways, enough about that shameless plug. I'm going to steal this from Jeff Snook, who's one of the finest reporters that I've been around or met or read. He put out a post and put some things that had me saying, wow. So people have been asking Jeff to put in perspective Ohio State's recent defensive issues with a historical perspective. Here's a couple things of note from what he wrote. The 66 points allowed in the first two games is the worst start for an Ohio State defense since 1890. That was the first year the university officially recognized a football team, by the way. And if you want to throw the Alabama game in, the 118 points scored by the three opponents that Ohio State has most recently played by far surpassed the previous high, right? Opposing quarterbacks have completed 67 of 105 passes for 1,005 yards in these three games. They've allowed 629 rushing yards, almost 210 a game. They've given up 1,534 total yards in three games, 511.3. The worst stat of all is opposing offenses have converted 22 of 41 third downs, 54%. 54% on third down in those three games. I mean, that leads the country any year, all year. And that you're supposed to think about this now. You lead the country at 53% third down, right? Let's say that's about on par with what leads the country, maybe 55%. You're going to get boosts against shitty opponents, right? You're going to maybe go 45% against a great opponent and go 65% against a lesser opponent to average out at 55%. Boom, lead the country. Against Ohio State's defense, these teams are clipping at 54% on third down. The other team's offenses have had the ball for 105 minutes out of 180 minutes of game clock. 35 minutes to 25 minutes. Unbelievable. And everyone wants to blame CJ Stroud. We'll get to that in a minute. I mean, the way the game unfolded Saturday, Jeff wrote this, Ohio State played from behind the sticks throughout the day. They had to go for it five times on fourth down. That speaks to first and second down efficiency and their ability to convert third downs. It really does. So Kerry Combs' defense right now, nationally, 112th in the country, 13th in the Big Ten out of 14 teams, not last, second to last. Scoring defense, 108th in the country, 12th in the Big Ten. rushing defense, 117th in the country, dead last in the Big Ten. And passing defense, 77th in the country, 11th in the Big Ten. To be honest, the passing defense has been the best part of the defense, and it's been bad. So how's that go? All right, let's just go through it. Let's just go through the game. Game run through. These are my notes from the game. C.J. Stroud starts off the first drive, 3 for 3, 2 bubble screens, and a high miss to Wilson that he absolutely jumped out of the gym to catch. That high throw miss is going to be a common theme, not only in this game, but all year, apparently. Starts out 4 for 4, then Ohio State didn't handle an edge blitz on 2nd and 2, ended up in 3rd and 7. Then Stroud missed Jackson Smith and Jigba on 3rd down, high throw, should have been a catch. My opinion, hit his hands, should have caught it. 4th and 7, they're going to go for it. Ohio State looks back, right, where they set hut. Don't snap the ball. Look to the sideline. They see Oregon in man coverage. They call their man beater, the little crossers with an OTB. We've talked about it. OTB means over the ball. Of course, when you look back, what is Oregon going to do? Oregon checks out of man coverage, checks to zone coverage. Now your crossers aren't alive. You got to hit the OTB, right? It's a little spot route over the ball. Chris Olave's got to haul ass, top end it. If he's matched, he's got to come back down his stem. He did neither of those things, and C.J. Stroud flies another one high. Turnover on downs. Awful first series. Then Oregon run comes out. 11-yard run out the gate. The linebackers look like they are slow to react and not playing fast. Again, another underlying theme. First play of the game, we all should have known what was coming. After the first drive, first play on defense, yikes. Second play, 9-yard run, same issue. Short yardage. Guess what happens? Ohio State in short yardage. Just watch. You want to go watch the Bama game? You think they knew in short yardage and red zone it was going to be press man coverage? I mean, do we have a tendency breaker on defense? Can we fucking bring a fire zone, a blitz where we play zone coverage or something? Short yardage, automatic, man coverage. What do you think they do? They throw a swing pass. Ronnie Hickman, who struggled all day covering the back out of the backfield, can't get there. I will tell you this on this first drive, the one thing, and all game, Cameron Brown is really good. I mean, really good. It is quite an asset to have him back because the corners played well. Denzel Burke and Cameron Brown played extremely well all game. It was the interior pass coverage that was a struggle. They get a big stop on 3rd and 10. Ronnie Hickman gets there this time, makes the play, and now that they got a punt. Where Ohio State's backed up at the 5. What was consistent throughout the game is the Ohio State offensive line was moving the line of scrimmage. The problem was Oregon always had a +1 defender, and Ohio State wasn't doing a ton of read options, wasn't doing a ton of RPO reads, wasn't doing a ton of zone reads with quarterback runs. That's non-existent right now in this offense. It really is. When they have 7-man box and Ohio State has 6 blockers, someone's free, and that free hitter was the guy making the tackle. C.J. Stroud had one good scramble on that drive, 14-yard scramble on 3rd and 5, plus a 15-yard penalty. It's a 29-yard play. It's huge. But Ohio State consistently ran the ball into an extra hat every time in the first quarter. And they're just not – Oregon never respected C.J. Stroud throwing the ball. They didn't respect it. I mean, he'd throw some bubble screens. They'd get 6 or 7 because there's 2 over 2 over there. It's not like they're devoid of a hat to the bubble screen. It's just you got to block one and run off the other. So they ran into an extra hat every time. 2nd and 8, false start on Luke Weipler. Didn't snap the ball. Now it goes to 2nd and 13. Then they run zone read. The O-line miss ID'd, which was a huge problem in the first half. The offensive line gets lined up, right? Let's say they're blocking zone to the right. The center has to ID who they're going to, the first double team. That way the second double team knows who they're going to. Because of the kind of 3-4 front that Oregon was playing, they did not ID it right one time in the first half. They got it fixed at halftime. But they moved the line of scrimmage. There was just free hats in the wrong places, right? Because they weren't IDing it right. So after the false start, they missed ID it. The Mike linebacker's unblocked, gets to 3rd and 11. Cade Stover then runs a decent route, can't complete the catch on contact. Great throw by C.J. Stroud, and it's 4th and 11. Penalty and a drop. Drive over. A penalty and a drop. These things that shoot you in the foot, drive over. Then Ohio State punts it, pins them at the 1, right? Pins them at the 1. This is where Ohio State needs a defensive stand, get the ball back in great field position, and drive down and score to open this thing up 7-0. First play, back shoulder fade, the first play to get the ball out of their end, completed. The linebackers are struggling in man coverage on the running backs all day, as are the safeties and Ronnie Hickman. Denzel Burke played outstanding, 2nd and 11, huge PBU. He was blanket coverage all day, him and Cameron Brown. Ronnie Hickman gets beat by the running back out of the backfield again. He has leverage. You watch that play. What is this? On the Oregon second drive. Ronnie Hickman is lined up outside of the left tackle. The running back is lined up inside of the left tackle. He runs a little arrow or swing route or whatever it was. Ronnie Hickman has already cheated where he's running, right? He has leverage on the route. But when the running back releases, he just doesn't trigger. And that is an underlying theme that you're going to see all game long. Guys aren't triggering, right? You watch some of these really good defenses. Georgia is the one that just sticks out in my mind from the Clemson game. When something declared, it was like they were shot out of a cannon, triggering to make the play. Triggering in coverage when a guy runs an arrow route. Boom, you go. Go cover him. Ohio State's defenders, the safeties and linebackers, they don't trigger. You see it on the next play after that completion. Taraja Mitchell, a step slow to fill. All quarter long he was. He was so good against Minnesota. And then against Oregon, he just is a step slow. He's a split second late to react. That's confusion. That is coaching. That's not the kid. That kid is not playing with confidence. He's not triggering. That is the you'll hear me say it probably 100 more times as I go through this. Just not triggering. So end of the first quarter, nothing. Really embarrassing offensive quarter. And then the embarrassing 14-yard run for a touchdown. Let's talk about this because I'm going to talk about it seven more times. They had three touchdowns on it and a critical first down conversion. 14-yard run for a touchdown. Why do we press a boundary corner with a cut split? So when that single side receiver has a normal split, sure, press him up, play man, love it, right? When he cuts his split way down, you can't press him. Why? Because if he cracks the linebacker and he does a good job selling it as a pass, right? He runs hard. The corner's got to cover him. He has him in man coverage. And then he cracks the linebacker, and now the corner can't come off and crack replace. If you crack the linebacker who needs to make that play on the outside zone play, the corner has to replace the linebacker and make the play. You can't do it if you're pressed playing man. It's mind-blowing. We did it three times for touchdowns and a fourth time for a first down conversion. Same exact play, and I know you guys saw it. It's not that hard. I've seen defenses do it for 20 years. This is not a new concept. Cut split in man coverage. The corner immediately looks at the safety and linebacker and says, cut, telling them that he could crack. He might be running a drag route, something across the field. Like, there's a reason he cut his split. Alert everyone, back off. So if he does crack, you can replace. That is base defense. I am teaching my son's sixth grade football team that right now. This is Ohio State fucking University, the Silver Bullets. I get it. They got you once. But just like Alabama, when they got them, 100 times? On not rocking and rolling to motion and on traveling guys and trying to keep up with Devontae Smith. You make the mistake over and over again with no adjustment. That is coaching. And it's not just Kerry Combs. We're going to blame Kerry Combs. He's the coordinator. What about Matt Barnes? What about Al Washington saying, hey, where's the crack replace? We need to back him off. Like, someone needs to say something. I go back to our first game at Ohio State, Miami of Ohio. We couldn't run the ball because we didn't know, Ed Warner didn't know how to run the zone read, right? They were getting two outside on the zone read every time. It's called gap exchange. The D end would take the running back. The linebacker would scrape over the top and take the quarterback. And Ed Warner didn't know what to tell the tackles. And at halftime, I asked why the tackle is not chasing the linebacker. It's called a pull knife. The quarterback pulls it, he knifes it. I'm the receiver coach. That's not my position. I said that because I understand the offense, and I realized the problem, and Ed just needed some help. I helped him out. We got it fixed. We started running the ball. It's not Kerry Combs' sole responsibility. Larry Johnson can help. He's kind of in his own world up front. Where Al Washington can help. Matt Barnes can help. I'm not making an excuse for Kerry Combs because it's fucking pathetic what his defense looks like. But this is a staff defense, right? And unless he is telling them to fuck themselves and not listening to them, there's no excuse for any of the defensive staff members. I go back to 2015 and 2016 on offense. It was all of our responsibilities. And then when we spoke up, I spoke up multiple times and Ed wouldn't listen to me. So what the fuck? It's not his job to listen to me, but I'm trying to help. So unless Kerry's telling them to fuck off, I don't care what you have to say, which I'm sure he's not. This is on every defensive coach on the field, on the staff. All right. Had to go on that rant. Sorry. So 7-0 Ducks. Then Ryan adds some RPO to the run game because of the stack box. Really, really smart move, right? Second drive, he realized they're stacking the box. We need to add some RPOs. Runs a speed out to Julian Fleming. CJ Stroud misses it. It's a four-step speed out. Should be a really simple completion. He missed it again. He was a little off at times. Great quarterbacks throw people open. Back shoulders, ball placement, or they run. That's what they do. Then third and nine comes up, and apparently we don't top-end routes at Ohio State anymore. I don't understand it. CJ takes an extra hitch, and Garrett Wilson gets hit as he tries to catch the spot route, and he can't hold on. The ball's late. It's a drop. Punt team again. Punt him to the one-yard line. Let's try this again, right? Didn't work last time. Let's try a second time. Good job, first and second down, third and eight, and Ohio State busts in man coverage on hard run action. There are tough conflicts in man coverage on run action, right? There are, right? You have man-to-man, they run action it, you're trying to stop the run, and the tight end sneaks behind you. That's possible. But on third and nine or third and eight, play your coverage. No awareness. If it was third and two or three, honest to God, I would say that's tough. Kudos to Oregon. Let's go. Keep playing. That's what happens, right? You got to stop the run on third and three. You don't have to stop the run on third and eight. Tackle him for a six-yard gain. Who gives a shit? I'd give them the benefit of the doubt of the conflict, but you need some awareness. Pass it off. Cody Simon and EA. Well, EA played, by the way. Side note. Feel happy for him. But you got to pass off. These linebackers don't know how to pass off, right? When you play man coverage, right? And there's a running back, tight end, two tight ends, running backs. You box it, right? You don't know who you have till they sort it out, right? The right outside linebacker has whoever goes to the right. It could be the tight end crunching back, the running back out of the backfield. You don't know who it is. You got to box it. You got to play 3-on-2 or 2-on-1, depending on the formation. And they didn't know how to do it. No awareness. Didn't pass it off. Everyone tried to tackle the run play, and they snuck a little play action in there. Then a great stand followed, right? Great defensive stand. Cam Brown locked down again. Great stand. Ohio State gets the ball back 7-0. Then Ohio State runs a bubble screen stalk slant to Jackson Smith and Jigba. Great execution. Great play call. And what happens is that Oregon starts bringing edge pressure. Ohio State's offensive line couldn't handle it. You got to be on what's called tracks. If they're going to start edge blitzing, you have to have awareness at tackle and make an out call or a rifle call or whatever it is, and you block on tracks. Now you're not blocking people anymore. Well, we talked about the ID system. That's gone. They're blitzing. They could hit any gap. They could twist, right? You block tracks, or you block, let's say it's zone right, you block the gap to the right. You just right, left, right, and whoever shows in that gap, you block. Someone's going to be there. Someone's going to come, and you roll off the ball. We didn't do that. We couldn't adjust to the rifles, the edge blitzers. And then third and eight, CJ Stroud throws an absolute strike to Jackson Smith and Jigba. They go tempo, wide open Garrett Wilson. CJ throws a dart. Ducks were looking at their wristbands as they snapped the ball. Garrett ran right by him. Tie ball game. Great play call. Great scheme. Really brilliant shit from Ryan Day. CJ Stroud has missed a couple throws, but he's playing really well. Then the defense comes back out, and I'll tell you this. JTT is an absolute fucking monster. Monster. He needs to play every snap. True freshman, I don't care, play him. They had a pulling guard come around. He obliterated the pulling guard. I mean, a 310-pound guard or 330, I don't know how big he was. Huge offensive lineman. He obliterated him. I mean, knocked him on his ass. He pancaked the guard. Single-handedly blew up the counter play. He is going to be a beast, and he's going to be a beast this year. They sustain the drive. They hit a big play. They get him to fourth and one on the 14-yard line. What do you think is going to happen? Fourth and one, short yardage, what happens? Man coverage, cut split, still playing press, didn't adjust from the first series, crack the linebacker with no replace, and they walk in the end zone again. This is Alabama 2.0, 14-7 Ducks, and it's not going to get any better. At this point in the game, CJ Stroud has settled in. He hit Olave on a speed out, a strike. Next play, drops a seed to Chris Olave in a deep ball, which was a drop. He didn't get much help from zone six. Three drops. All of them had a drop. Olave had a drop. The O-line is now moving Oregon off the ball, but still not IDing shit. They're double teaming to no one at times, and our linebackers are hitting our backs at 4 yards. The good news is, if you don't block a linebacker and he's not a blitzer or just crazy aggressive, it's still going to be a 3 to 4 yard gain, right? It still will be. It's still going to be a good play. But if you don't ID linebackers, they're going to be there at 4 yards to hit them, right? That's what's going to happen. We're struggling with ID. We get that fixed at halftime, as I said. Then fourth and two. We go for it again. Like I said, Ryan had to go for it five times on fourth and two because of shit like not IDing the run game. Bad run, tough look, ball needs to cut back, second level reads. I mean, Luke Weipler gets knocked back and forces Mayan Williams to make a decision early. This is a zone play. He should have taken it backside of the center getting knocked back. He bounces it front side instead of cutting back. Bad play, not ideal, can't get knocked back at center. It made him make a decision early, and it was just a bad play. Fourth and two, stuffed, no conversion. The defense goes out, and a theme for this defense all game was Cody Simon was playing confused, like a lot, right? Play action. This is a play. They ran play action to the defense's right. They pulled a guy to the defense's right, and he didn't flow with the play action or puller, and when he realized play action, get depth and sit in that middle zone. He didn't. The minute he realizes play action, he sprinted back the other way and left a gaping hole in the middle of the field. He just plays confused. It's like he's never been coached what to do. It's like play action is an illegal thing that they got away with, and we should be livid that they got away with play action. Crazy. Next play, Lathan Ransom gets beat again. Cody Simon looks like he's so fucking confused again. Just pass drop. It's a pass. He spun around running the wrong direction. I don't understand why we're so confused by play action. It's infuriating to watch. As you can tell, I'm furious, right? Then they get a holding call that bailed him out. Jack Sawyer gets held. It wasn't really a hold. It was a shitty call, and OSU got lucky. Cam Brown locks shit down again on a deep ball. So Ohio State gets the ball back with not a lot of time left. They got to go 2-minute offense, marching ball down the field, and most confusing play of the game on offense. C.J. Stroud's worst play outside of the pick to end the game was with 1 second left, they snap the ball, and he checks it down to the running back. That is coaching, ladies and gentlemen. 1 second left in the half, you launch the ball in the end zone, see what happens. Throw a pick, who gives a shit? Get him on the ground, we'll be fine. Launch in the end zone, hope something great happens. That's just inexperience showing up. It's going to happen with a young kid, is what it is. So it's 14-7 Oregon at half. Really pitiful half, right? The under's looking good, though, which hit, by the way. They come out. Oregon gets the ball. Do a good job on first and second down. Third and three, Tommy Eichenberg, who played entirely too much. I don't know what the problem is with not playing Kayvon Pope some more, but Tommy Eichenberg played a ton. He is absolutely lost in high weeds. He chased a split zone tight end when he had the B gap, and C.J. Verdell is still running. I mean, he has the B gap. He chases the tight end on split zone, probably because we're so worried about play action fucking pass now that we don't play our gaps. Now, this is the conflict that linebackers do face. 77 yards later, C.J. Verdell is, I think he's still running. I think he actually made it back to Oregon without anyone touching him. Unreal. So 21-7 Ducks. Ohio State comes at, and the best thing that happened, then this is going to happen, right? It's not on the O-line. It happens, right? They come out in a little funky defense. Maybe you're confused at O-line. You don't get the IDs right. Greg Sadrawa and Kevin Wilson fixed the ID issues at halftime, which is great. C.J. Stroud was magnificent on the first drive of the second half. Dart after dart. On time, accurate, impressive. Capping it off with a strike to Jackson Smith and Jigba for 6 points. Just outstanding. The cornerback, then Ohio State comes out, and now they're doing the tight split offense again, and now the corner's blitzing. We're sending the corner, right? He was pressing, now we're sending him. It's just not working, right? The corner's not getting there. Legend Cavazos one time blitzed and just stopped. Just stopped and like was trying to see if he was going to throw it. That's not what you do when you blitz. You match the hand and you keep going and you hit the quarterback. But they're just sight adjusting. What a sight adjust is if a receiver sees a blitz, he changes his route and the quarterback throws it to him. They were sight adjusting to a little wide hitch kind of, I don't know, jog off the ball. I don't even know what you call it, a tempo route. And they were just hitting it, 10 yards a pop, sight adjust. The cornerback blitz didn't work one time, not once, but we kept doing it. And Ronnie Hickman the Ronnie Hickman experiment as a box safety is just, I hope it's over. Because spinning him in the box to play avoided Mike linebacker position is just fucking stupid. And OSU keeps getting gashed because he's hesitant. It goes back to what I said. Stop asking kids to do something they aren't built to do. Put them in positions to succeed. What are they good at? Ask them to do that, right? I feel like I'm watching tough Borland 2.0 when I watched Eichenberg run overrun the ball, face mask the ball carrier, and fall down. It was just athleticism. Let's get great athletes on the field. Guys that can run, guys that can bend, guys that can change direction. The linebackers are an absolute train wreck again. So we finally backed off our boundary corner so they couldn't crack and take two. It's a miracle. We're going to forget that soon, though. Now, I will tell you this. Josh Proctor out for the year, we saw that happen, and it was – but that play, if you go back and watch that play, he's playing post safety in the red zone. They run a quarterback draw, and he fills from post safety and hits him at the line of scrimmage almost, maybe a couple yards downfield. I mean, just an unbelievable play. If everyone played with Josh Proctor's urgency and trigger, this defense would be unstoppable. It's a huge loss for the Silver Bullet defense that he's out for the year. The D lineman, I'm not going to name any names, but got blown off the ball, fell on his leg, quote unquote fell, and broke his leg. That's that. Josh Proctor's done for the year. Like I said, scratch that. Next play, never fix the cut split press man issue. Three walk-in touchdowns now on the same play because we don't know how to play off with a cut split because of the threat of a crack block. Took two with one, and they walked in the end zone three fucking times. Woohoo! Go Bucks, right? Embarrassing. 28-14 Ducks. Ohio State gets the ball back, and C.J. Stroud is once again dealing. His last 17 throws, he's 16-17, 243 yards and two touchdowns. To the people that say he played like shit, you don't know a fucking thing about football. He had maybe four bad throws that I can remember. Four bad throws. The interception was a bad throw. I get it. He threw it high a couple times. He was dealing. For a true redshirt freshman quarterback in this type of game, playing behind the way the defense is playing, C.J. Stroud was the fucking player of the game on offense, if you ask me. Second and two, OSU takes a shot. A double move. Oregon played soft bail. They knew it was coming. So that was a game plan issue. Oregon knew it was coming, right? They've been playing kind of contested coverage all game. Ohio State gets on the plus side of the field, get second and two. That's a high frequency to take a shot, right? Because an incomplete pass is no big deal. You're at third and two. A lot of people take second and short launches down the field, especially on the plus side of the field. Ohio State did it. Oregon knew it was coming. CJ probably should have checked it down, but game plan checkmate Oregon on that play. I'll tell you this much. Travion Henderson's an animal. He breaks tackles and eats yards. That's what that kid does. DeJuan Jones had a false start that killed him in this drive. And what you notice about DeJuan Jones, he's a big, big kid. He gets tired. He gets lazy. And when he does, he starts holding. He starts waist bending. Had a couple false starts that kind of slowed down some drives. And then C.J. Stroud comes out and answers. Throws a strike again to Jeremy Ruckert. And he drops it. I mean, it's quote-unquote broken up, but that needs to be a catch from a tight end. Strong hands, squeeze the ball, catch, tuck, turn, right? You catch the ball, tuck it right away. Should have been a catch. I'm calling it a drop. Other people might not because it kind of got broken up, but my opinion, tight end's stronger than his safety. He needs to catch that ball. Then he throws, CJ throws an incomplete pass on corner flat, and Ruckert was absolutely exhausted, apparently. He barely ran his route, didn't pull the coverage, poor decision by CJ to try to fit in the corner route. Now it's third and 15. He throws an absolute strike on a field speed out to Chris Olave for 13 yards. Now it's fourth and two. Fourth and two, another one. Ryan Day has to go for it on fourth down. Why? Because of a penalty and because of a drop. It's the same theme, right? Why they get stopped. It's never like Oregon blitzes and makes a play. It's just self-inflicted wounds. Trey Henderson busts on pass pro and fourth down. There's a free rusher. CJ avoids it, throws it up to Olave, and there's no call on the PI. Not as bad a call as Buckeye fans would like to make it out to be, but you got to play to catch the ball. Chris looked like he was playing to get PI. He felt some contact, and he I don't want to say he flopped, but you got to play to catch the ball. That's how you get PI, right? Oh, just rough, rough, rough to watch. So turnover on downs. Oregon gets the ball back. Great job on first and second down. Third and six. They run the mesh play that Ryan Day introduced to college football at Indiana in, 2017? I mean, it's Ryan's mesh play. Ohio State's seen it 100 times. Cody Simon is completely lost again, and they hit the OTB in zone coverage. I mean, I'm telling you, this defense has had to defend this play in training camp and spring ball at least 100 times. The corners are playing their asses off, though. At this point in the game, you're sitting there saying, wow, our corners are some dogs. Third and 10, this late in the game, Kayvon Pope sighting. He's in the game. He plays a beautiful zone linebacker. And I immediately when I saw him, I said, there's my guy, Kayvon. Why is he not playing more? He dropped to his zone. Here's how zone defenders work, right? You have a spot drop. You drop to your zone. You read the quarterback's eyes and shoulders. When his front hand comes off the ball, you break on it. That's what you do, right? It's a front hand drill. When the front hand comes off, you break. Kayvon does it perfect. He drops to his zone, reads the QB's eyes, front hand comes off. He breaks, almost picks it off. It was beautiful to see. It made you wonder, where the fuck has this been all day from the linebackers? So we get a great stop, third and 10. Kayvon with a great PBU. Stroud comes out and is still dealing. Drops a dime to Jaxon Smith-Njigba over the middle. A great play call on second and 10, screen, and Travion just slips or it might score. Great job by the O-line blocking on the screenplay. Second and 7, it come out. CJ misses Garrett Wilson on the big post. Tough throw. Misses him a little bit. Might have been catchable. Probably not, though. Then they have a huge fourth. Then it's a huge fourth down. He has a big boy throw, what I call a big boy throw. A corner route to Garrett Wilson. Get him down to first and goal. Next play, Travion Henderson brings it to a 7-point game. 28-21, Oregon Ducks. Oh, man. Then they run a scissors route on second down. And legend is... I don't know how legend Cavazos is in the game. I don't know why. I don't know why we play these young kids, third string kids, but we play them, right? He is completely lost, doesn't cover his deep third. He squeezes a post route that the post safety, the free safety, is taking over. He's lost. Taraja Mitchell needs to get more depth. Gash City, right? Gash City, right away. First down, good job. Second down, hit a gash, plus a 15-yard penalty. All momentum is gone in a 7-point game. Third and 6, they run the same exact play. The cornerback is off, but Legend is in the game. I don't know why he's in the game, and he doesn't replace. So they back the corner off so that he can crack replace. The receiver cracks the linebackers. Legend doesn't replace, and they get an easy conversion. The confusion continues, right? They run play action, a corner route, and Bryson Shaw at post safety has his eyes in the backfield and runs right by the tight end. The post safety. He has no run fit. None. It's just guys trying to do other players' jobs now. Now there's a dissension in the ranks, I guess. Beyond frustrating to watch. Zero eye discipline, zero adjustments or awareness. This is all coaching. Now it's 35-21 Ducks. Ohio State comes out and needs an answer. They take a shot to Olave, and he wins, overthrown. Comes back and takes another one. Now CJ connects to Olave. You can't be mad about the misses on the overthrow because deep balls are 50-50 at best, right? On a great day, you're going to be made, what, 60% on deep balls? Second and 6, they throw four verts out of two tight ends. Jeremy Ruckert runs a pathetic route and gets mauled, no flag. I blame the receiver when they get mauled. Get open. Third and 6. C.J. Stroud misses Jaxon Smith-Njigba on the corner route, and now we're 4th and 6. 4th and 6, max blitz. C.J. Stroud shows poise, gets depth, delivers a strike to Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and he skates in the end zone. Great play. I mean, you talk about a big-time play by a big-time quarterback. That was a victory for C.J. Stroud in his career. Big-time play on 4th and 6. Now a 7-point gain again, 34-28. Ohio State needs a stop. They get to 3rd and 7, and what happens? Oregon has a false start. Welcome back, Buckeye Nation, to the game. The crowd gets a false start, then another false start. Now, I mean, they're just moving backwards. Huge stop, all the momentum, 7 minutes and 16 seconds to go to tie the game and flip the script and rewrite history. First play, C.J. Stroud throws a strike to Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Second play, wide open Garrett Wilson. C.J. misses him long. Third play, Jaxon Smith-Njigba falls down. The throw is not on C.J. Stroud. Jaxon Smith-Njigba fell down. Fourth play, 3rd and 10. Scramble for a first down, flag. Bullshit holding call on Thayer Mumford, but he got beat. So, again, you can blame the ref. I blame Thayer for getting beat. Can't get beat. Now, the 5th play, 3rd and 20. We throw a drag route to Chris Olave. Poor ball, doesn't lead him. Chris slips. Probably should have been targeting, is what it is. You know why it wasn't targeting? Because Mike Pereira said it should be targeting, so everyone knew it wasn't going to be targeting. Who the fuck pays this guy? I mean, every time he talks, he's wrong. Every time he comes out, I'm like, please say it's not targeting so that Ohio State can get the targeting call. 5:44 left, and it's on the defense again to get a stop. They get a huge 3-and-out. JTT tips a pass to save the day. Ohio State has second life to tie this game. 4:43 left on the 28-yard line for all the marbles. First play, C.J. Stroud checks it down to Jeremy Ruckert for 11 yards. Second play, Mayan Williams for 6 yards. Third play, Mayan Williams for 9 yards. The Ducks are reeling. Momentum is in the Buckeyes' favor. Fourth play, coverage sack. Second time of the game, Jaxon Smith-Njigba ran a corner route from the top of the numbers. If you look at a field, a corner route needs to be more towards what I call the divider between the numbers and the hash. You run a corner route from the top of the numbers, there's no grass for the quarterback to throw it. No room. Zero awareness of spacing, first sack of the game. That's a coverage sack. That is not on CJ. Maybe could have got rid of it, whatever. Fifth play, CJ sails an over route high again to Garrett. Third and 18, scramble. Obviously an awful throw. Overthrows Olave for a pick. I mean, that's, in hindsight, that's ball game, but they're not dead yet. They need a stop. And Ohio State needs a stop. And why they roll Antoine Jackson in the game, I don't know. The Proctor injury, we talked about it, just gets rolled off the ball. He shouldn't be in the game. He's not as good as the other interior D linemen. Third, they get to third and three. They need to stop him here. They call an RPO to the tight end, and the linebackers lose him again. This is the conflict I'm talking about. That's tough, right? That one is a tough one. Great call, great execution. 20 seconds left, ball in the 11, not a real shot. Unreal throw by C.J. Stroud as he's getting sacked to get the first down. First down is the toughest one. He gets sacked in his ball game. 35-28 Ducks. Brutal. In summary, the defense, absolutely grotesque. Disgusting. 505 yards, confused, put in poor positions, awful defensive football. Outside of the obvious and things we already discussed, there was zero disruption. Defense is about disruption. Great defenses disrupt the ball. No sacks, no pressure, no turnovers, nothing. This defense died a slow and painful death. They bled out all game. It's like someone with a battle wound laying on the field for days to just eventually die. The positives, the silver linings, Cameron Brown is back. Two catches on six targets. He was really good all day. Denzel Burke was outstanding. One catch on five targets. Ronnie Hickman struggled, especially covering the running back of the backfield. This safety position is in turmoil without Josh Proctor. Oregon had a clear plan. It was extremely well put together and executed. Exploit issues, right? Cut split receivers, crack replaces, as well as challenge the linebackers and run pass conflicts. It was perfect. It worked like a charm. Joe Moorhead versus Kerry Combs was ugly for the Silver Bullets, just like Steve Sarkisian versus Kerry Combs was last year. Linebackers are an issue, major issue. Not with talent. I saw guys trigger and hit against Minnesota at the linebacker position, right? At times. Their talent is there. Cody Simon gets lost in coverage. Taraja Mitchell doesn't trigger. It's always a count late. Tommy Eichenberg is not ready. Kayvon Pope looked really good, but he only played seven snaps. I don't know what that is about. EA should be a nice addition once he gets back in the flow of playing football. Like I said, major issue at safety. Bryson Shaw did not look like the answer. Ronnie Hickman as a box safety is not the answer. Proctor out for the year, so this is a lot. This is turmoil. I mean, it is what it is. We need to stop talking about firing Kerry Combs, though. Even if that was what needed to be done, which I don't believe it is, doing it now isn't going to do anything positive. Kerry Combs is a staff guy. He's a good person. I promise there's not ego involved. We need to chill out with the fire Kerry Combs. The answer is to fix it. Part of it is stop grading these fucking players champions when they played average at best. Man the fuck up, look in the mirror and fix it. Coach them hard. Be demanding. Hold them to a high standard. Hold yourselves and coaches to a high standard. The talent is there. The players are there. The coaches need to get it fixed. I've been in a staff room like that on Sunday after a game like that. It's brutal. And Ryan Day is making it extremely uncomfortable, if not flat out just demanding that they do what he wants them to do. It's hard. It's hard being a position coach in a struggling side of the ball. It really is. Because you want to do more, but you also don't want to overstep your boundary. You can't have too many Chiefs and not enough Indians. You can't everybody be trying to fix the defense. It needs to be a collective effort where everybody does their fucking job. The linebackers need to play better. They need to play well coached. They need to know what they're doing and unleash those son of a bitches. Let them go hit the fucking ball. Let them go get the ball. Sick the ball. They don't. They play timid. They play confused. That's all that Al Washington needs to do. Get the linebackers to fucking trigger. The corners are playing outstanding right now. So Matt Barnes is doing a great job. Now, scheme-wise, probably could use some help, right? I don't know if that's his job, Carey's job. I mean, he's supposed to be the guy. Matt Barnes is. Larry Johnson, I mean, he's got to – they're doing – I mean, the D-line's playing well. They're not getting after the quarterback. They don't have a premier pass rusher right now. Zach Harrison has been disappointing through two games when it comes to that, but they're playing well. I mean, he had the one strip sack against Minnesota that was great. The offense as a whole, honestly, it wasn't bad. They had some issues. They fixed some issues. They were 6 of 15 on third down on money downs, which is not good enough. The first, second down could have been better. You don't want to have to go for it five times on fourth down, but I'm here. I'm not going to stand for any CJ Stroud slander right now. And you guys all know, I didn't think he should have been the starting quarterback going into the year, but I trust Ryan Day. He's a friend of mine and he's one of the smartest coaches I know. So when he named him the starter, I believe he's the best one. And he has been really good from the second half at Minnesota through this entire game. Highest graded player on offense, 5-for-11 on deep balls. I know there were two that were painful to watch, but 5-for-11 is somewhat respectable. You're throwing 11 deep balls, Christ. 15 of 30 over 10 yards. 50% is a little low, but again, not terrible. The three drops certainly didn't help. Ruckert had 5 targets, better than the 1 that he had last week. This is the worst game by the O-line in a while, mis-IDing the 3-4 front, and they were sloppy and pass pro. But that being said, 10 total quarterback pressures on 59 pass plays, that's a decent day, considering a handful of them were because CJ needs to get the ball out. All in all, I don't know what to tell you. We all know the defense needs fixed. I think I've explained exactly what I see as the problem. I don't know what else to say about it. I saw it last year, Alabama. Go listen to that fucking podcast. It's the same shit over and over again. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. When we play Penn State, the same shit is going to happen. They have the film. They have the Alabama film. They have the Oregon film now. They are going to implement similar things. We need to fix them, adjust, and someone in the box. I don't think it's Kerry moving to the box. Kerry's never seen the game well in real time. He's never been a real scheme guru. I don't think that's the answer. I think Matt Barnes, if he's in the box, he needs to see this shit and figure out how to get it fixed and fixed fast. We can't wait till Sunday to fix these problems. That's what's going on right now. Shit, some of them, we don't fix them. Short yardage, man coverage, run a man beater, run something that hurts man coverage. Works every time. Oh, I'll tell you, a lot of content when we lose, but I fucking hate it. That was brutal to watch. But a little silver lining. The last time Ohio State lost to a big-time out-of-conference opponent in week 2 with a redshirt freshman quarterback, things ended just fine. Granted, we had a loaded defense. Granted, we had some playmakers on offense. This team on offense is not that dissimilar from 2014. The defense has a ways to go. We need some people to show up like they did in 2014. Tyvis Powell showed up, right? Von Bell became a great player. The corners became household names. Curtis Grant played out of his mind. Taraja Mitchell needs to be the Curtis Grant, right? These linebackers need to just buy in, unleash it, and these coaches need to get them to play. Big weekend coming up, not for the Buckeyes, but we got some decent games now rolling into week 3. Ohio State has 2 kind of lick your wounds games to try to get some things cleaned up, try to get some guys some experience, to try to get some confidence back leading into Big Ten play. A lot of work to be done on defense, and I will keep you updated what I'm hearing, but that right there is my analysis. An hour long of what the fuck just happened in the horseshoe on Saturday. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed it. I know you didn't enjoy the game, but hope you learned something or got some perspective from a former coach at the very least. And if you didn't, as always, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown. Ohio.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.